belongs to me. Belongs to me.
You know. Wilbur from his brand new release, and we got Samuel on the line. Hey, Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, this is the first time you've been on our show, and we always like to start by giving the fans this opportunity to get to know you, not only as an artist, but also as a person. And I found the best way to do that is to look at your journey, how you got to where you are today. So give us the story of Samuel Wilbur.
All right. Well, I'm from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I started playing music when I was 16 years old. My mom showed me her Beatles albums, and I just knew that I wanted to create music like that. And so I got a guitar, started learning all the Beatles songs, and then I started trying to write my own. And ever since I was 16, I started being in bands with my friends and writing music and performing. And over the years, just kept honing the craft and writing and singing and performing and, playing out. And hopefully getting better each year was the goal. And so now I'm 40 years old. I've released, about a dozen albums, and just love to create music and love to write music as a form of, therapy and expressing myself with some of the frustrations of the world that we live in. And, it's just a passion to continue to pursue and create art.
Okay. Well, you're definitely not going to starved for material if you're looking at the frustrations of today's world.
Absolutely.
I think we have quite a bit of material out there right now. I've always found that musicians always have this moment in their life where it's their musical awakening. I know for me, it was when I was about 7 years old. I found my mother's record player and her 45s, and I put on Bobby Darin's Distant Shores. I'm an old guy. And I put on Bobby Darin's Distant Shores, and I was flooded with these visions and imagery, and it just awoke me to the possibilities of music and how powerful it was. What was that earliest recollection for you that you knew that, that this is it, there's something here, there's what is this music thing?
Yeah, I mean, definitely growing up in our household, my parents played a lot of music, a lot of Beach Boys. I remember getting to see the Beach Boys early on at like a state fair in South Dakota and just dancing on a blanket with my family and really loving just the feel-good music of the Beach Boys. We were big, because our last name's Wilbur, we were big Traveling Wilbury fans, so we would play a lot of Traveling Wilburys, and just like the way music could elevate a mood and make people, come together, I just knew that was something I wanted to be a part of.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about this new release. Every release has that inspiration or that thing that drives it into existence. What was that for this release?
Yeah, so this album's called Ivory Tower, and it's kind of just about how the people in power kind of do everything they can to stay in power and to kind of keep everybody else kind of fighting at the bottom so they can hold on to that power. And so these songs have been written over the last three years or so, and just kind of how it's been just frustrating to not see progress made, that I feel not being made in the right direction, feels like our country's going backwards in a lot of ways, and we have more billionaires than ever, and those are the people who are kind of controlling our everyday life. And so just kind of that frustration with everybody in power trying to just kind of maintain the status quo and not let it change at all. So that's kind of the thesis of the album, trying to kind of fight back against that and kind of fight back against the rise of this technology-centric culture that is just kind of treating us all as data mining, fossils or whatever, just kind of that's everyone's just kind of trying to pump us to get all the data from us that we can. And yeah, it's, we're all like, everything's commodified in this bizarre way.
Now, let's talk about you as a songwriter. When you sit down to begin that process, what is the, I guess, the mechanism that you use that taps you into the muse?
Yeah, so for me, I can't write music unless I have an instrument in my hand. And so I make sure to put time every day to playing music. And so I just pick up a guitar, I'm strumming, I'm finger picking, I'm noodling around until I kind of just find a little something, and then I'll just find a little chord progression or a little riff happening, and then I just start to kind of free associate and sing random kind of, you know, just free thought words over it, and then eventually, you know, something will come out, and I'm like, ooh, I like that turn of phrase, or I like that expression or whatever, or that melody. And yeah, I just kind of keep on polishing it until I have a verse or till I have a chorus. And then once I have a little bit of that, then I can kind of make a structure after that. So it always just starts with some little something tangible that I can, like, that's worth, I'll be like, okay, this one's worth pursuing. If this is a good chorus or a good verse, let's build a whole song around it.
Okay. Now, is there a particular song on this release that you find to be personally connected to you, or something that you really something you connected to on this particular release?
Well, absolutely. It's all very personal connection to it. If I write so many songs, if it's not something I feel really, really positive on, it doesn't make the cut of the album. But the first track is called Everything is Falling Apart, and it's kind of just about how in our world it feels like a lot of the wheels have kind of been falling off. Holding on to the good in our life. So the lyrics are, everything is falling apart, but I'm still in love with you. And so being able to have my wife, my partner, to be by my side through all of this has really been the only way that, you know, I feel like it's manageable to get through this kind of, you know, day and age. So to try to hold on to hope, even when it does feel like everything is falling apart.
Okay. Now, let's talk about getting your sound when you go into the studio. And every artist has their process when they get in that environment to capture their sound. What is your process when you go into the studio that helps you get not only the sound that identifies the song, but the sound that identifies you as an artist?
Yeah, so I record everything in my home studio, with the exception of drums, but I record everything there. And I use a software called Ableton Live, and I've just been using that for years. So I'm pretty efficient with it, and so, which is helpful to kind of be able to take a really small idea and build on it fast. And so, yeah, I have, a lot of my songs kind of use this similar instrumentation, you know, electric guitar, bass, acoustic guitar, piano, and that's kind of the foundation for a lot of them. So once I know the structure of the song, I can kind of fine-tune what other auxiliary instruments I'll want. So on this album, there's a lot of live trumpet and a lot of live violin, and so that was really fun to kind of collaborate with other musicians once I had the parts written, to let these really talented violin players or trumpet players really kind of go nuts on these parts that I had written. So that was kind of really fun and a new addition on this album. So that was exciting.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the lineup. Who's playing on it?
Yeah, so I'm playing a good chunk of all of the instruments. So most of the guitar, most of the bass, most of the, there's a bunch of ukulele on there. A lot of piano is me, and then we have the wonderful Bob Bean on drums. He drummed on my last album, Matt Patrick, he's the one who mixed and mastered the album, and he played a whole bunch of random instruments on it as well. And then this album has a ton of great special guest vocalists. So from the band Kiss the Tiger, the wonderful lead singer Megan Creedler from that, she's on five tracks, and she just has a really powerful rock and roll voice. So the album really comes alive thanks to her. Also have some great guest vocals from Laura Kiernan from the great band in Minnesota called Kiernan. And then one other wonderful guest vocalist, Danny Michelle. She is in the great band Full Catholic. So I was lucky to work with so many talented musicians and vocalists to make this come alive.
Okay. Now, once you get something recorded and you get it, you know, you're putting it out there, you got to get it to radio and you got to get it to press. And you're working with Krista Valenkis of Elephant and Flowers Media to do your PR and kind of help you get that word out. How is that relationship working?
It's great. Krista's amazing. This is the second album I've worked with her on, and she's just been instrumental in helping me get my album release show lined up at the Parkway Theater on October 30th. She helped me get this great gig at PBS on October 15th. And and then she hooks me up with wonderful interviews like this and helps get my album reviewed. And yeah, she really helped connect me with a lot of people in the local music scene.
Okay. Now, I get into a lot of discussions with artists about a whole variety of subjects that are happening in the music industry. And one of the biggest hot button items, I think, that's out there right now is artificial intelligence and its influence on the music industry as a whole. And usually when that subject comes up, you know, the musicians in the room automatically, before I even get the words out of my mouth, you know, raise their hands up in defiance, saying, "I'll never use AI." And, you know, of course, I get splashed with holy water and, you know, whatever else, you know, get the side eye, you know, the whole bit. But I think a lot of musicians miss the point. They miss what AI can bring to their business plan that can make them more efficient and effective in their marketing, because that's really where the strength of AI is. But I'm always curious what other artists think. What do you see AI's strength as in the music industry going forward?
That's a good question. I definitely don't see its strength as being any part in the creative process. I don't think there's all this AI music now, especially that Spotify is putting out, just to fill playlists so they don't have to pay artists. And I think people don't want to hear soulless music. I think they want to hear music with a point of view and with a perspective. And even though you can pump out AI music that might sound decent now, especially compared to what it was 2 years ago, I don't think it'll ever really capture the heart or the soul that humans connect with when they listen to music. So I definitely don't think the creative side is the strength. I'm not as well versed in what AI could do with marketing, so I can't speak on that. I will say I think a lot of these tech companies are investing billions in dollars of this AI and not really even knowing or even being able to articulate what it can actually do yet. It's just kind of a bunch of fancy smoke and mirrors right now as far as what I can tell. I know it can do a lot of stuff, but I haven't really seen anything that that has made my life easier yet. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Okay. Well, you know, I look at AI as being in three distinct categories for the music industry. You know, of course, the first category is the creativity side. And, you know, that's the one I think that scares most musicians, is the fact that they think that, you know, AI is going to take over creativity. But for me, you know, I'm an old guy. I've been around a while. I've been in the industry since the mid-60s, that's when I started playing music. And, you know, I've seen technology change in the music industry over the years. I've seen the industry, you know, run around with their hair on fire, you know, over things like the drum machine and MIDI and loops and samples. And, you know, every time it's the same story, they scream and yell. It's going to destroy music. It's going to make it, you know, take the human element out of it. And all of a sudden, you know, the public, you know, they hear what's being abused by that technology. They pass on it and they go to artists that are using the technology as a tool, which is what hip hop came out of, is the whole sampling and looping and so forth and so on. And I see AI on the creative end. You know, back when in the 60s, if you know, the rhyming dictionary was considered cheating. You know, today you can put in a word into ChatGPT and say, hey, what rhymes with this? Both perfect and imperfect. You can put in a phrase and say, how many ways can I say this? And it will help you. It can help you with creating, you know, chord structures. And if you really think about it, as artists, musicians, and songwriters, we start our careers by learning other people's songs, which basically gives us an AI sort of database in our minds that we draw from when we work on our own material. AI just gives us a bigger database to work from, to pull ideas from. So that's the creative side. The next section that I see is the efficiency side in the studio. You know, having your own studio is, you know, I've been a recording engineer since the early 70s. And I've been doing this a long, long time. It's 50-something years now. And you can go into, you know, the store or Sweetwater, and you can buy some really great mics and preamps and plugins and DAWs. And the only thing you can't purchase is those decades of experience that comes from a recording or a mastering engineer. And with AI, that brings that whole technology to you. You know what I mean? Like Ozone 12 for mastering gives you great starting points. Neutron from iZotope, you know, as a mix assistant, you know, can set up at least your basic mix for you, just as a good starting volume pan kind of thing, to tell you, hey, this is a good starting point, and give you that, you know, that advantage, and that, you know, in seconds as opposed to hours, you know, because, you know, when you start a mix, it's a mess when you first start.
Yeah.
You know, with like Neutron, you can set it up and it can give you a basic balance. You know, when I started as an engineer, that was one of my jobs as an assistant engineer, would go in before the engineer and set up a basic balance, you know, so he could come in and mix. And then, you know, going to the third one, which is that marketing end of things, you know, give you an example. I mean, here's a reality check. On Spotify right now, there's over 900 years of music. Think about that a second. 900 years of music. If you started listening the day Leonardo da Vinci finished the Mona Lisa, you'd still be looking to listen to music to the year 24-something. You know what I mean? We don't have enough lifetimes to listen to all the music that's up there. Plus, there's 20,000 songs a month going up. So it's just exponentially, you know, growing. So we need to find our fan base. We need to find what engages that fan base. We need to find where that fan base exists. And we need to find a way of getting that fan base into our marketing funnel and keeping them there long enough to get them down to the super fan area of our funnel where we can monetize them and create revenue stream. And AI is the perfect tool for that. Now, I did an experiment where I went to this site called Cyanite. It's Cyanite.ai. And you can upload a song, and it will analyze the sonic signature of the song and give you a list of data on that song. The meta tags, this genre, the mood chart, descriptive paragraph of the song. It will give you the artists that are playing music like you. It will give you playlists that are playing music like your music. And you take all that data and you throw it into ChatGPT and you say, act like a music marketer and find me the best way to attract the largest potential fan base with engaging content and show me where I need to put this content, and it will output a complete marketing plan for you. Now, you can also take one of your songs, upload it to ChatGPT, and tell it, hey, write me a script for a music video for this song using Sora to capture some of the clips. And it will write a whole storyboard out for you. So all of these tools basically give the independent artist a level playing field with the major labels in finding and using data to market their music. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, definitely with like the software, like Isotope and stuff like that, I could definitely see that being useful. I'm familiar with those plugins. I don't have them, but I know that they are very useful. And I think if you definitely are having like writer's block or, you know, needing support in that, those could be good tools. I guess I'm just old fashioned as far as I like the joy of the creation process. To me, is stumbling upon the chord progression, you know, that makes you excited for the song you're writing, you know, and stumbling upon the lyrics. I definitely have used rhyme generators before, for sure. That's definitely helpful. And if you were stuck, if you're trying to write a music video and you're stuck, I think those ideas that you mentioned are definitely like, you know, just new tools to a artist toolbox, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Now, another great topic that I get into is, the fact that streaming, we all know, is not sustainable as a business model the way the revenue was set up. Spotify, you know, instituted their policy a couple of years ago where they're not going to pay any track that gets less than 1,000 streams a year. And their new term of policy, their terms of service, has basically said that anything that you put on our platform, whether it's a playlist, graphics, in excluding the music itself, but all of the, you know, your bio, all of your graphics, your little videos that you put up there, that's all their property that they could use whenever they want, and you are unable to take it away from them. Once it's up there, they own it. That's in their new terms of service. So we need to find something that's better, something that's more equitable, something that's fairer. And one of the things I'm watching is this whole world of a decentralized music industry. And it's utilizing Web3 and blockchain technology as a driving force. Give you an example. There are streaming services now that have been developed that are out there that utilize the blockchain as their driving engine. And the big advantages of that is multifaceted. Number one, nobody can own it. It's owned only by the fans who pay for the service and the artists who put up their content. They're in control of the service. There is no board of directors, no profit model. It is strictly kind of a crowd kind of sourcing thing, a direct fan to artist kind of relationship. The other is that it is, how can I put this? It is totally transparent. You can't go to Spotify with an account and say, I want to audit your books. They'll throw you out of the office. There are rumors about artists being shadow banned. There are rumors about, you know, how do they really count streams? You know, do you have 999 streams and all of a sudden you get shadow banned and your stream stops so you don't hit that 1,000 mark? You know, we don't know what they're doing and they're not transparent. But with these services, you can go in at any time, look at your music in that block and see exactly how many streams you got, how much money you made at any given moment. In addition, it's a decentralized system, so your music doesn't exist in a single place. So nobody can pull it down. Nobody can take it off the system and ban you from having it up there, because it's on a network. It's on several nodes throughout the world. So there's no way of them taking it down on you, which Spotify has been, you know, famous for doing. The other thing is that you can embed these smart contracts into these blocks where you can set up percentages of who gets what. If you have a band or a producer, or even you can create shares in your songs and sell those shares to your fan base where they can now benefit from your streaming on these services. And none of the accounting has to be done by you because it's all automatic in this smart contract. What do you think of that as a potential for the future of streaming?
Yeah, I mean, anything is better than what we have right now. I feel like I've noticed a lot of local artists are pushing to take their music off Spotify. And a lot of national acts have done that as well. Like cool bands like Deerhoof have gone and put that out there. And I know a lot of, you know, independent artists don't have, you know, that luxury per se, because they're not, you know, able to. They rely on streaming in some capacity, or they need people to listen to their music, you know. So there just hasn't been the alternative streaming service yet that people feel comfortable or confident that they can switch to, and people will still hear their music, because people are so stuck on the Spotify or the Apple Music train right now. If you're not on there, a good chunk of people are never going to hear your music.
Right. I mean, right now, Spotify is the discovery platform. And, you know, of course, Apple Music, you know, not as much, but still has a strong presence. But if you really look at the digital revolution, one of the things that I've that really kind of glares forward is the fact that every time we had a company that we thought was going to dominate the music industry, they got replaced. LimeWire was replaced by Napster, you know, and then, of course, Napster was replaced by iTunes. We all thought that Apple was going to own the music industry forever. But now, where are those iPods? You know, they're sitting in the kitchen junk drawer just collecting dust. You know, and then, of course, you know, Apple got replaced by Spotify. So, I mean, just looking at that trend, we know that something can come down the pike and replace Spotify. It's a matter of, we as independent artists, do we want to move the industry into a more equitable direction, or do we want the industry to move us to where they want us to be, which is never really in our benefit? If you look at the statistics from Chartmetric on Spotify, 91% of the music that's on that platform is from independent artists. That is a powerful statistic. If we as independent artists started to introduce our fan bases to this new technology, this new cutting edge technology of Web3 and blockchain based music industry, we can lead the industry to a new direction. What do you think of that proposal?
Yeah, I think it's great. I would love to see the evolution continue to favor the artist, you know, and the consumer, because the consumer right now is listening to compressed audio that sounds terrible, and musicians spend so much time and money to get their music to sound great, and people are hearing it, you know, at a compressed file size, you know, and so they're not even getting the user experience is trash, and the artist experience is trash. So I'm excited for the evolution of the next step to hopefully favor both the consumer and the artist.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the great things about these blockchain streaming services is that you can actually upload WAV and FLAC files instead of compressed MP3s. You know, they're not going to compress your file on you. You can get, you know, high-resolution audio files up on these streaming platforms like Audius.co, Opus, and Opulous. I mean, these are all the next cutting edge experience. And you have the option of selling, you know, shares in your songs to your fan base. And one of the great things about that selling shares thing is that your fans can now, once they purchase these shares, can buy and sell them between themselves. But every time they resell a share, you as the artist gets a commission off of that resale. So it's a way of creating revenue streams for the artist directly from the fans, cutting out the middleman structure of the music industry.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay. Now, one of the things I think is important is having the ability to create content and getting it up on social media to promote you know, this current release. What are some of the things that you're doing now that's helping you get the word out on this?
Yeah, so I've been making some short form videos. We filmed a music video last weekend for the song Everything Is Falling Apart, so got a bunch of short clips for that I can kind of slowly roll out, you know, to keep generating some buzz and interest. And I do some kind of live performances of these songs, kind of stripped down, and I have that up on TikTok. I perform a bunch of the songs solo at like open mics and kind of film that as well to put out on social media to get, you know, to engage the fan base. And so those are kind of the avenues that I've been working with.
Nice. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show today and talking with us. And it's been a great conversation. And we're going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love this. Just, you know what? Just turn it up.
Tired of being unwell. Until it's blinded, everything repeats. Are you reminded? Everything repeats until it won't. Are you well not sure? As we all choke, I'm not afraid to die.
ahead.